Thanks, Dennis. So I was the scientific manager of the NITEX 200 project. So I'm going to talk about, just give you an overview, broad overview of the study and some of the things that we learned along the way. Yep, got it. I do have one disclosure to make. I've done some consulting work with the NITEX Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization affiliated with our research center at the University of Wisconsin. Dennis already kind of talked about this, so I'll skip through the research coalition and just kind of get right into what the study was all about. Fundamentally, NITEX 200 was a study of organizational change. There's been a lot of interest in implementation science and quality improvement in healthcare, and we all know that healthcare faces a lot of problems, so we're trying to figure out the best way to solve problems in healthcare, and a lot of those problems have organizational roots. So the types of approaches to organizational change and quality improvement that have become fairly common in healthcare include things like distance learning, teleconferences and web-based webinars, that type of thing, in-person meetings, kind of not unlike what we're doing here today, one-on-one consulting, and then combinations of all these approaches together. But we've come to realize that there's been very few studies that have formally tested the effectiveness of these approaches, and even fewer that have looked at cost effectiveness of different approaches to quality improvement. So the primary objective of NITEX 200 was to look at the cost effectiveness of different methods of organizational change. Dennis talked about this a little bit as well, the founding members of NITEX, the model is based on engineering principles, and there was a lot of success of those early members in meeting the aims of increasing access and retention and treatment. But we realized that to take this model to scale, there were a few barriers in place that were going to make it hard to do. Number one was funding. The original NITEX members basically applied for a grant and they got reimbursement. Their time was sort of bought out to participate in the project. The intensity of services they received, we kind of threw the kitchen sink at these early members, gave them a lot of training in different forms, so that was a lot for participants to undergo. And the selection process was competitive, so we were really looking for organizations that we thought would do well at organizational change. So it wasn't a take everyone kind of approach. We picked the best and the brightest. So as Dennis said, NITEX 200 is designed to identify the active ingredient of the NITEX approach. So we looked at a couple of different modes of training in NITEX 200. And I'm going to talk about these four groups. Sometimes they're called interventions, or you might hear arms, but basically we hand random assignment to these four groups. Intracircle calls, now that's sort of the distance learning mode of collaboration. Those were monthly teleconferences that were hosted by a trained facilitator who's a quality improvement coach. Organizations came on once a month and got advice from the facilitator and from one another. I should mention that all of these services took place over an 18-month period, so basically 18 monthly phone calls. Coaching, we assigned an expert in quality improvement to work with sites individually. Coaching consisted of an initial site visit, followed by monthly teleconference or phone calls and email correspondence. Learning sessions are face-to-face, in-person trainings. These took place within each state. We located them so people, the organizations, wouldn't have to travel across state lines to participate. We had a core faculty of coaches, three faculty members who traveled from state to state providing the content of learning sessions. And then we had a fourth group that was the combination of all three approaches, which most closely resembles the original sort of kitchen sink approach that was used with the founding members of NITEX. So there's a natural ordering here of cost and intensity. We're looking at intracircle calls as the low cost, low intensity option. If it worked, it'd be a way of doing quality improvement kind of on the cheap. Coaching and learning sessions, sort of intermediate levels, and then combination. We wanted to test whether we needed to have all of this together to have an effect. So we had random assignment to groups. It's one of the hallmarks of the NIATX 200 study. Each arm had access to the NIATX 200 study website. The website formed sort of a basis or a backbone of content that all of the participants had access to. We had state-based improvement collaboratives as a nested design. So within each of the five states, we randomized on a state-by-state basis. So you had roughly 10 organizations in each state and each group and prospective data collection. We had three primary outcomes. The first was waiting time from first request to first treatment. Continuation through the first four treatment sessions. Those are the same outcomes basically that were used in the prior evaluations of NIATX. And then we also look at the number of patients treated on an annual basis. We had a phased project timeline. The first 3 months were dedicated to baseline data collection. And then we moved into reducing waiting time as a focus. The next focus was on increasing continuation. And the last focus was on increasing the number of new patients. And at least for waiting time and continuation, we followed up those 6 month intervention periods with a 9 month period of sustainability tracking to see if the clinics could maintain the improvements that they had made. Eligibility criteria, we were looking at outpatient providers in this study. And they had to have at least 60 admissions per year, so we didn't want any very small programs. We weren't looking at detox or residential treatment here. The providers had to receive some public funding and couldn't have any previous experience with NIATX. So the aims were, as I mentioned before, we're looking at, of these different approaches, which has the greatest effect on waiting time, continuation, and number of new patients. And along with that, which approach is the most cost-effective. So to kind of step back and put the study into context a little bit, we work with five states, over 200 programs. Those programs treated over 70,000 patients over the study period. We collected over 4,000 surveys, provided over 9,000 person hours of training in the various learning services. So the figures, I guess, are designed to demonstrate that NIATX 200, by pretty much any measure, is the biggest study of organizational change that's ever been done in the addiction treatment field. And by a lot of measures, it's kind of hard to compare from field to field, apples and oranges. But by some measures, it's really the largest organizational study ever done in healthcare. We did a literature review to look at other studies of this type that have been done. Randomized control trials are very rarely done at the organizational level. We looked at 11, or a lit review that looked at all of the quality improvement studies in the last 10 years. It's a little bit outdated now, but only found 2 out of 1,100 that had random assignment. And where in healthcare, where the RCT is the gold standard of proving cause and effect, that's led to, I think, a lot of a doubt about quality improvement and organizational change. We can't really say for sure what works, or if one thing is going to work in one situation, if it'll work in another. So NIATX 200 was really designed to respond to those types of criticisms. So we learned a lot along the way conducting a project of this scope, understanding how difficult it is to recruit and engage providers over an 18-month period. Something you really have to live experience to really understand. But we knew that it was critical to provide valuable services. In the beginning, we had planned on having one group that would just get access to a website, and we were basically told by providers at recruitment meetings that, well, if we just get a website, it's not worth our while to participate. So, I mean, that was... We realized that we had to provide something of value to get participation in the study. Along with that, having aims that are clear and important, making a business case for why, why reducing waiting time, increasing continuation, and getting more people into treatment. Why is that important from an organizational perspective? We worked hard to make the business case connection that if you do well in this study, it's going to help your organization. And then seeking powerful allies. It was really critical for us to work with the state authorities in this whole process. They were instrumental in recruiting the number of providers we needed and keeping them on board, collecting data. We couldn't have done it by ourselves, certainly. Cultivating commitment. We really strove to practice what we preach, managing this project. It's kind of ironic, I stayed in one of the hotels closer to the Capitol, and on my way over here I walked by the NPR offices, National Public Radio, and I've often drawn the comparison of running an NPR pledge drive must be similar to conducting a project like this, because if you listen to NPR, you know that they don't just ask you one time for a donation. They spend 10 days hammering it into your head, and you eventually relent if you're going to donate. Well, the same thing applied in iTex 200. We knew that sending an email wasn't going to make anything happen. It took repeated phone calls, reminders, really engaging our participants to make things happen. So that's just par for the course in doing this type of research, I think. And addressing turnover, clearly turnover is a problem in the field. It can cause problems for a study like this. We felt it was important to have not just one person at each organization, but a whole team of individuals dedicated to the project. So if one person left, we could try to fill in the spot and keep things moving along. So to conclude, it was a big project, and we've seen some impact on policy in the five states. In the beginning, none of the states were tracking waiting time as a standard, and it's now standard client reporting in three of the five states. And we've seen a lot of improvement work continuing after the project ended. And finally, randomized trials of organizations. They're tough to pull off. They're expensive. But they are doable, and hopefully we'll learn a lot from this project. So that's it for now. Thanks.